Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
The big question I had about this movie is, how sexy is Jessica Rabbit? Like, legitimately, I want to talk about this because some people think she is genuinely like, they do the Bob Hoskins in this, where their jaw hits the floor. They think, my God, that is one sexy cartoon.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another Bald Move Pulp podcast. Today, we're talking about Who Framed Roger Rabbit, the 1988 American semi live action animated hybrid fantasy comedy noir crime drama.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's got a little bit of everything. It was directed by Robert Zemeckis. He Back to the Future and Forrest Gump fame. It was written by Jeffrey Lawrence Price and Peter Stuart Seaman, who also wrote Doc Hollywood, The Wild Wild West, How the Grinch Stole Christmas 2000 edition, and is based on the story Who Censored Roger Rabbit by Gary K. Wolfe. Stars Bob Hoskins. You might know him as Mario from the Super Mario Brothers movie, as well as Enemy at the Gates, Christopher Lloyd, also of Back to the Future fame, Taxi, Adam's Family Films, Joanna Cassidy. She was a replicant in Blade Runner, also starred on the Showtime 6 Feet Under, or was that HBO? Whichever. 6 Feet Under. Richard La Parmentier, unbelievably, was the dude that Darth Vader choked out in A New Hope. Jaw hit the floor when I read that. Also, comedian Charles Fleischer supplied the voice of Roger Rabbit, and superstar Kathleen Turner, the very, very sultry voice of Jessica Rabbit. She could be found in the 80s Romancing a Stone, and also in Prizzy's Honor. Jim, it's been a long time since I've seen this movie. I don't know that I've seen this movie as an adult.
Yep.
And I had a grand old time reacquainting myself with Roger Rabbit. How about you? Have you seen this movie before, and how did you find it?
I have seen this movie before. Again, like you, it's been at least 30 years, at least, very minimum. I don't think I saw this in theaters. I'm positive I didn't see this in theaters, but I must have seen a bastardized, I don't know, whatever version on TV. I do wonder how much editing they did to this on TV. But yeah, that's my experience with it. I have not seen it in many years. I do remember liking it when I was a kid, but I didn't really understand the significance of it, I guess, at the time. Now I do.
Did you like it?
Yeah, when I was a kid. You mean now?
Yeah, now? Yeah.
I definitely like it.
Because anytime you say, I understand its significance, I'm like, okay.
Is that leading? No, you're right. I forgot to say whether I like it now. Yes, I liked it now. I really enjoyed it. It took me a minute to settle into it because it starts weird. But I found myself really looking at like the techniques that they used in the animation and stuff and being really impressed by it. And then ultimately, I think the ending of this movie is so just demented and wonderful. Okay. Every single second of the last, I don't know, 15 minutes of this movie, I love.
Yeah. And Bob Hoskins, man, swings for the fences,
man.
Right?
Fantastic, yeah.
Like, he has to commit to both the hard-boiled detective and the complete Looney Tune for this movie to work.
His physical comedy is so good in this.
You know, it's funny because, like, I looking back, I was like 12 years old when this movie came back or came out, and I did see it in the theater. This was my most favorite of movie, the whole family movie, or mom and dad would take, and it's like. You know, it's like at this time I felt like I was too old for kiddie films, but I still like this stuff. And I was also a little bit of a movie buff at the time. I was watching Entertainment Tonight because I, you know, was always on the lookout for the next Star Trek thing or the next science fiction thing and next cool action film. And this was big. Like this was like a big event. It was, you know, on 2020 and it had Entertainment Tonight with the behind-the-scenes special effects and the rigs they use for the weasel to splash water in Bob Hoskins' face. And I'm like, how they got the handcuffed rig. And I'm like, it just looks so cool.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And it looked, it looked also so funny. So, like, the whole family was hyped. We saw it at opening night, and it slayed us all. And I was one of the ones, too, that, like, you know, I lived next door to this neighbor, the family I was neighbors with, who was also in our church. And I'd spend a lot of time over at their house during the summer. This thing was on replay on that VHS throughout the whole summer. We were quoting that stuff, trying to do our best Roger impersonations. But I got all these, a lot of times I get these kid crushes on actors. Like, I'm like, I enjoyed him so much in this kiddie thing that, like, I'm going to be a Bob Hoskins fan now. And sometimes I'd get you in a lot because Bob Hoskins doesn't make anything like this.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, yeah.
He made Super Mario Brothers, and that's the worst kind of trouble you can get into. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I would not say I'm a Bob Hoskins fan. I liked seeing him in Super Mario Brothers. I don't think I liked that movie. It's a bad movie. I like him in this, but I'm not a Bob Hoskins fan. I don't know much of his catalog.
Yeah, I've seen a few. Wasn't he? He's in Brazil. I liked him in Brazil. He's good in Brazil.
Yeah.
As the air conditioner guy.
No, nothing against him. You can only watch so many movies, though, and I just never picked up his catalog.
Yeah, but and the other one is Christopher Lloyd. Had a big kid crush on him from Back to the Future, and this was definitely paid off. Like, and Adam's Family. I felt like Christopher Lloyd as a child didn't really steer me wrong. But yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. I thought the effects would look dated. I thought you'd really see the compositing. I thought the humor would be really kind of kiddie. But if anything, I enjoyed it more as an adult. Like, there's a lot of adult humor in this movie. Some of it I got as a 12/13-year-old. Some of it that flew over my head. Like, I don't think I understood the difference between probate and prostate and what that...
And then from a plot level, too, I didn't get anything of what was going on. It was like, oh, there's a guy with a gun. He shot somebody. Oh, he's the bad guy. There's like the whole red cab situation and the clover leaf of it all. It kind of blew my mind when I watched this time around.
Dude, I love it. It's like Chinatown or something.
Well, that was an inspiration for this movie. Yeah.
Dude, this. And also, it works well as a legitimately good piece of noir.
Yep, totally.
And it both is an excellent example that it plays deadly straight, but it also like riffs on it and fun. Like the fact that he's got a, you know, like the fact that Sam Spade or somebody would have a gun that somebody gave to him from a previous adventure or something. And Eddie Valiant goes to pull out this case that Yosemite Sam gave him his cartoon gun. And it's got animated bullets got questionable racial sensitivities, but the idea is just so fucking cool, and this stuff is so well integrated. Like when he takes that gun in his hand, it looks like he's got a cartoon gun. All this happened in 1988. Just insane. And Roger Zemeckis knows how to make an entertaining movie. What can I say?
Yeah, he absolutely does. I'm a big fan. If anybody is cataloging here, I am a fan of, it's Robert Zemeckis, Christopher Lloyd. Those guys, kind of dominated my childhood in a weird way.
And I noticed that, I know sometimes he gets lampooned for this, but Robert Zemeckis really enjoys pushing the frontiers of like just purely technology, special effects. And, you know, that's, he did that Beowulf stuff or that, like, he's going for the hyper realistic computer animation.
Yeah.
Some say Uncanny Valley, the Polar Express, but he's always had, and this was just so next level, the rigs, the complicated rigs remember behind the scenes materials on this, you know, from my childhood of them rigging the thing to splash and them to the way they got the rabbit cut out for the blinds and how that Jessica Rabbit's grabbing his tie. That. And it just, I it still is really incredible. Some of the stuff they do with the interactivity of the sets.
To the point where I'm like, you know, it's one of those movie magic things where I'm not totally sure how they did it. And it integrates so well. It's the thing that shocked me. I mean, there are definitely like points in this movie where you see, okay, there are some matte lines, there are some real compositing issues here. But for the most part, and especially like, I can imagine the animators spent a lot of time on the Jessica Rabbit introduction scene. Look, I don't know what gets people going about anime, like badly drawn women, but some people really get off on that. I bet they spend a lot of time on that, but it shows not just in how Jessica is drawn, but how she integrates into that scene. I was kind of blown away by it.
Yeah, and it's you're right. You can see some matte lines here and there, but what's amazing is just how many times you can't. And like the first 10 or 15 minutes, I was hypersensitive. I was looking. But like after that, I even stopped. Like I realized that I was just consciously accepting. Like there's sometimes it was jarring, like when Eddie first goes to Toontown. That's such a radical change. But it is a radical change.
Yeah.
Eddie doesn't fit in to the world. And it kind of works as an artistic way. Like, and it's about as good as you can get. Like, it's just, man. Yeah, the plot blew me away. How relatively complex it was. The like adult kind of sensibility and some of the dry humor brought. I think it was Arlene. Is she the waitress?
Yeah.
She's kind
sounds
of
sounds right.
Or Dolores. Dolores. She's kind of like, you know, a straight person to comment on the ridiculousness that's kind of swirling around and. Anchors Eddie to the normal world instead of the toon world. I was blown away by how much I enjoyed it.
Me too. I really only have one complaint, and it's how heavily they lean on puns for a lot of their jokes, and it just sometimes comes off as cheesy, but not all of it is that. There are a lot of just really good gags in here. So I don't know, it wasn't that bad.
Plus, I took puns as that's Roger Rabbit's shtick, kind of like Bugs is kind of like, yeah, what's up, Doc? Like, if you got irritated every time Bugs Bunny did that, you're just not a Bugs Bunny fan.
Sure.
And he's just like got the crazy puns and the please kind of bullshit.
And I was kind of impressed by how inventive a lot of the puns were, even if it was like, oh, okay, another pun, huh? Some of them were like, okay, I'm impressed by how you found a way to integrate this pun into your movie in a way that felt natural and not super forced.
Music by Alan Silvestri, amazing score, like really had a good handle. I wonder how much of the composition was like golden age of cartoon music, but the stuff that they did for like the baby, was it Baby Huey? Shit, I don't have the names of these guys down, but Baby Herman.
Yeah.
But the original score they had for that and like Roger Rabbit's motif, I saw that stuff was original. It sounds like it's right out of the period, post World War II Hollywood, kind of merry melodies, Looney Tunes, Walt Disney. That's the other notable thing about this is they got Steven Spielberg. Was able to go around and get damn near every major cartoon from Warner Brothers to Disney back when that was a much fairer fight. And the complex IP that had to be swam through and the contracts to make that happen. That's the other thing. It's like this didn't really happen. Like me and Jay were just talking about this on Feeny that's not released yet, but a viewer wrote us in to remind us about it's like the cartoon superheroes save the world. Do you remember that? This came out in
vaguely.
Like 1990, where like they had a bunch of cartoon characters from all the major cartoon franchises, and the Warner Brothers, and like the Care Bears, and the Smurfs, and all this stuff.
Like Mighty Mouse in there.
And it was to essentially tell kids to not use drugs, and it was sponsored by McDonald's. Do you know who wasn't in that?
Mickey Mouse.
Disney character, because even to save kids from drugs, they wouldn't work together.
No.
But for Roger Rabbit. Enough.
Yeah, for Steven Spielberg. I mean, that's the guy, right? Like, this is Steven Spielberg's era. Yeah. He goes around and convinces everybody. In fact, this is the only time that Mickey Mouse and Bugs Bunny have ever been on screen together, which is kind of surprising.
Oh my God. It's the heat of cartoons.
Only time did Nero and Pacino ever. Yeah.
All right. We kind of talked in generalities. You want to get down and dirty to business. I'll also say that also, if you are like an aging Gen Xer, millennial parent, and you haven't taken the time to show your kids this while they're still like little, like they're under 12, 13, do it. It's free on Disney. I think the whole family would enjoy this. They might get too cynical for it when they're later teens. But you'll have to wait until
they're 40 for them to appreciate it again. So,
and if you don't, and or just watch it yourself if you have fond memories of it, because it's just a lot of fun. Like Bob, just seeing Bob Hoskins pour his heart and soul into this thing is incredible. And the Christopher Lloyd, it's worth it for that.
Oh my God, yeah, yes,
it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
We'll be right back with more Bald Move after this brief pause.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
This week, we're getting our Mad Max on with the prequel Furiosa. Anya Taylor-Joy and Chris Hemsworth team up with director George Miller for some more demented Aussie fun. We'll have a basic spoiler-free review for everyone, but we're saving the full fuel-injected podcast just for our club members.
Finally, Jim is back from his travels west this week. What thrilling tales we have of the lawless wasteland known as California. Join us live at 1 p.m. or catch the podcast out later in the day.
Time's running out to get your tickets for this year's Badass Fest 6, June 21st at 7 p.m. in the heart of our fair city of Cincinnati. Plus, a side quest opportunity to kayak with Aaron. Get your details and your tickets at baldmove.com/live.
If you want more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content, plus ad-free feeds. You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk Podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
And now, back with more Bald Move.
All right. If you haven't seen this and you want to know what it's about, this is essentially Chinatown in 1947. The scandal is the Toontown. The owner of Toontown is dead. He's murdered. It's a complicated real estate deal involving the death of the transportation system in Southern California. Caught in the middle is a Hollywood gumshoe, Eddie Valiant, whose brother was killed by a cartoon, vowed never to work with cartoons again, is caught up in a blackmail scandal that involves the will of the owner. I mean, it goes places, but it's a guy who hates cartoons. It's forced to work for the cartoon to clear his name. And if you haven't seen it, it's an A+ recommendation from me. Okay. Where do you want to start?
I want to start a little meta, because I love, you know, we talked about how they brought together all these disparate cartoon franchises. I love the meta of it all, how they've created a character who is Mr. Acme. They've kind of like strip mined all of their lore within the cartoons to create a world that exists with all the toons. And I found that part like really, again, creative, inventive, fun.
It's very busy. Like, Toontown looks like it's exhausting, but just each frame and angle being just a joy. Like, I really appreciated there was, like, when you see buildings in the background, there was a bar that was, like, drunk and leaning up against a residential building who was, like, kind of, like, annoyed and trying to shove him over while the police department was, like, like, looking at him. Like, it's just everything is sentient, which I have questions about. And but like all Acme, eras,
tons of different eras. You'd have the old like Steamboat Willie almost era, and you have like what then was a modern Mickey. I really like so to talk a little bit more about like this Acme guy, how he integrates into the plot, right? Like it's his murder that kind of pushes the plot forward, but it's also his gimmick, his thing. Is the thing that ultimately like saves the day, which I thought was just like a really clever way to use Acme products, which are just a gag in like Roadrunner and shit in Warner Brothers cartoons, to smash people on the head with different stuff. But in here, they're integral to the plot. Old, it's really fun.
The old disappearing, reappearing joke. And to go back to the world building, like you mentioned, like almost from Steamboat Willie, you see Betty Boop and she's working an adult nightclub and, you know, Bob Hoskins, Eddie Valiant Express is concerned for, and she's like, oh, you know, work's dried up since Toons went color. It's like, there's economics to this world. The Betty Boop's a black and white cartoon and she's no longer fashionable. So she's not, but she's still
but
got
she's
it.
She's still
boop,
got it because she's still drawn the same way. Right. Like I love that stuff.
It's really, really clever.
And then those are just two examples of countless examples of that in this movie.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's also just the juxtaposition of just how ultra hard-boiled noir Ed Hoskins, Eddie Valiant is, down to his, you know, Gal Friday, the Femme Fatale. But it's just got this funhouse skewer to it. But he plays it deadly straight. Yes. Like Bob Hoskins doesn't understand that he's in a ridiculous situation. This is his reality. He's
works like alongside Toons.
He's like as infuriated with Roger Rabbit as he would be if Roger Rabbit was just Pauly Shore. And like, you know, it's just like this is an incredibly annoying situation. I don't even know if I want to help this guy, but also I don't want to be a pat. And
I'm curious about this case. And I love the way they introduce that, too. Like, the two disparate worlds here between Toontown and the what I'm going to call reality. Although they're in this movie, they are both reality. Toontown and regular Hollywood. They start this movie with a cartoon, an animated short, which you would see all the time before movies back in the 80s. I don't know if they still do any of this stuff.
Pixar. And to some extent, Disney animated their computer animated still do it from time to time. I don't know if it's a guaranteed thing anymore, but
it doesn't seem like it. But they started with a cartoon, which is funny in its own right. I really enjoy anytime baby endangerment will never not be funny. It always was funny. It always will be funny to me. I really love how they start this with a cartoon, and the transition there is so perfect because it sets you up for what this movie's going to be, right? Like, it's going to be zany. It's going to be insane. There's going to be a lot of pain and suffering for cartoon characters, but they're also these hard-boiled guys. Like, Baby Herman is a bastard. Like, that guy's horrible. And he's this three-year-old, you know? And then they go right into the noir of it all. I just love that transition.
Man, it's such a skillful transition because it functions as both, right? It functions as the Pixar short, and it's also the intro to the movie.
Yeah.
It's also in the moment of in Red October where they zoom in on the guy's mouths and then the Russian turns to English. It's like you're through the looking glass. And you're right. Because that's where I thought the cringe would start. I was expecting this to be a little bit cringier than it was. And I'm like, I bet, you know, because I like that it's a 12-year-old. It must probably at least be 25% cringe. And I thought at least because I remember that cartoon being really funny. And it starts off and I'm like, I don't know. This seems like it might be stupid. But what makes it work is it's like 1 or 2 degrees more unhinged and violent than your average Warner Brothers or Mickey Mouse. Like you would never in a Warner Brothers movie see a baby crawl. You'd see a baby crawl across a sink, but it wouldn't fall and have its head stuck under the water for like 5 seconds until it bobbles to the other side.
And Roger wouldn't be cooked alive in an oven and then electrocuted and then have chili sauce dropped on his head and then have knives stuck almost through him and swallow an ironing board. Like,
dude, that sequence of events rivals what happens to Harrison Ford throughout all of the Raiders of the Lost Ark, right? Like, I love that, especially the oven and the double light socket.
Yes.
And by that was the sequence where I stopped. I'm like, okay, yes, this is legitimately funny. I don't know why this shit is funny. I don't know why Three Stooges skits are still funny.
It's the Rube Goldberg comedy torture of it all. I like how one thing kind of affects another and leads into this other thing that's going to be more painful. In like the World's Biggest Kitchen too. The other thing is it's really impressive, cool animation when, you know, the room just changes shape at will. And I don't see this in cartoons. Maybe I'm not watching the right cartoons anymore, but that kind of hyper realism doesn't really happen very much in animation. Like now it's all like, we want to be in the real world. We want to ground these things. There you can make a kitchen the size of a stadium for about 5 seconds and then cut back to another angle and it's just a regular kitchen.
It's like a cathedral all of a sudden.
Yeah, I thought that was so cool.
When the camera swings up,
he's flying past, you know, when he's being shot across the room, he's flying past like 9 entrance doors in this kitchen. Yeah. It doesn't matter. It's hyper-realism. It's just fun.
I want to talk about how efficiently they introduce these characters too, especially because you have to care about Eddie pretty quick or this movie stops working and he has to ultra sell this thing. And I love how you can tell he's a detective. He's down on his luck because he's too broke to buy a streetcar ticket. So he's bumming rides with the kids up front. And he's also the kind of guy who's going to bum a cigarette off of children.
Oh my God, these three kids.
And then they establish just with like him coming into his office and being sad that, like, you know, he used to have a partner. This is a brother and brother department agency that had this storied career in cartoons. And and then his brother got killed. You find out he got a piano dropped on him,
What's wrong with him? Toon killed his brother, dropped the piano on his head. That's hilarious.
And it's like the Naked Gun, right? It is such a total commitment to what it's trying to be that it makes it that much funnier.
Yeah, it makes the world feel alive. Like that whole intro sequence of like we cut from the cartoon and transition right onto set where Baby Herman's like, I haven't talked to my fucking agent about this or whatever he says. He's botching his lines again. It just shows you like, it builds that world so fast. Like this is a world where toons are real. They're employed in Hollywood to make cartoons like you make live action movies.
Yeah.
It tells you so much there. And then, you switch to Bob Hoskins and this is an easy story to tell, right? Because we are so familiar with noir films. You see one detective who can't pay his bill. I'm like, I know that guy. I've seen him 100 times.
And we know he's seedy. He's doing a little sex for, you know, blackmail for cash. He doesn't have too many scruples. He owes the waitress $100 drinking tab. And they imply it's in a week, a single week.
Oh, Jesus.
Because she's like, Friday's the day. Now, maybe it's a month, but like, you know, at some period of time, the manager balances the books and...
Yeah, he doesn't look like a man who drinks $100 worth of 1947 booze in a week. But
he admits to being a drunk throughout the movie, and it's a problem. He actually kicks it throughout the movie. And I love that again, in the first 15 minutes this happens, you see him... Yeah, take this job. He goes to this nightclub and talks shit to a gorilla.
Is the bouncer.
So it shows that he has absolutely, he's not going to take guff off of fucking anybody. If you're going to tell a 9 foot tall gorilla, you're going to be fucking with him and mean mugging him. Then right. Yeah.
Nice monkey suit. Yeah. Pretty good.
His Miss Havisham office, where the one half where his brother used to be, is just completely, it's like a shrine. Which leads to one of the most impressive moments of interactivity is where Roger Rabbit touches his chair and then leaves fingerprints on it.
Yeah.
He's just, I don't know. It's so they so utterly make this character serious in the first third of this that they can then afford to trade that with ridiculousness and put him in ridiculous situations and make him ridiculous and the character can withstand it. And it's just... Hats off to the character to what they're able to do with so little.
And you kind of need that grounding, that rock in the center of this, because like you said, the tunes can be a lot in this movie. Like that opening sequence where he's kind of walking through the studio grounds, and like there are just tunes everywhere. You get several sequences where, you know, squeaky shoes drop out of cases, and it's a cacophony a lot of the time. When a lot of tunes are present, and you kind of need him to be there to say, okay, I'm just going to hold on to you, Bob Hoskins. You see me through this.
Mm-hmm. I really, as an adult, I don't know if I appreciate this as a child, but it is actually very funny when you find out that, Mr. Acme, when he was playing Patty Cake with Jessica Rabbit, that he literally was playing Patty Cake with Jessica Rabbit.
Yeah.
That and especially with Kathleen Turner, maximum sexy, making the, Walter, Patty. And then you see the pictures and like... And
this time, take off the hand buzzer. Yeah.
and the way Roger Rabbit's flipping through these things faster and faster and faster, it's like it's a flip book.
Yes.
Oh God, it's so fucking funny, man.
Yeah, so creative.
Them treating him like he's an actually bereaved, you know, husband, and also the fact that there's a little bit of Jerry from Parks and Rec in this, where like, why is Jessica Rabbit with him?
Yeah.
But like throughout the movie, you find out that like, no, she actually does love him. She's crazy about him. He makes her laugh.
That's the thing. The laugh is important. The laugh is kind of everything to these tunes. And I like how that integrates into the plot later in the film too. And Bob Hoskins has lost that, right? Since the tune killed his brother.
Yeah. Yeah. Like he's, and the feeling is like, they also have that really effective scene where Eileen, or not Darlene, whatever
Dolores, the
waitress is, Dolores. You know, he borrows her camera because he's probably pawned his, and she says, "Hey, I've got some pictures from blah blah blah, our last time in Catalina," and that's like a really nice moment where he goes from the crime scene and then he realizes he's developing. These are apparently years old pictures of them having a great time. Like you couldn't kind of tell what kind of, but they had a romantic relationship.
Yeah.
And he's like got a big smile and he's really, and then he gets to the picture where his brother was there too. It's really.
Yeah. And they got like silly,
really
making silly faces and wearing dumb costumes and stuff. Yeah. They looks like they're having a great time.
But you get the idea that he's just barely getting by. He's just crawled into a bottle and, you know, all the things that, you know, he said, me and my brother used to love working the Toontown. We thought it was a laugh, a gas. And, you know, Christopher Lloyd, not Christopher Plummer. He's very different.
Yeah.
Christopher Lloyd's, you know, his Toon character, the murder, like, took all that from him.
Mm-hmm.
And
Judge Doom.
What a great villain.
Yeah. Okay, I want to talk about this because this is another thing that they introduce.
Yeah.
The big question I had about this movie is how sexy is Jessica Rabbit? Like, legitimately, I want to talk about this because some people think she is genuinely like they do the Bob Hoskins in this where their jaw hits the floor. They think, my God, that is one sexy cartoon. I've never understood that.
Have you seen the movie Cool World?
No, which is like the Brad Pitt version of this. I have not seen it.
Yeah, because I was like, because I'm trying to see if you find, okay, do you find Lana in Archer hot?
No. Okay, I think if you can,
you don't have this gene at all.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, I was gonna say, like, if you can get a more realistic depiction, I think the problem is it's not a realistic depiction in any way. It's just a handful of lines on a screen. Yeah, like, I don't see a soccer ball and think, oh my God, that's sexy.
Here's my problem with Jessica Rabbit, because I find elements of her sexy. I find essentially everything from the waist down sexy, and I find her face, I don't know, okay. Her face is kind of weirdly animated, like she has no nose. I don't know if that's attractive for women to have no nose.
I like women with noses, just going to put it out
I like
there.
Women. Yeah, yeah, I don't like Walter Goggins, Fallout looking women. My problem is there's something fucked up with this woman's rib cage. Like, I get that they're trying to get her to have massive tits.
Sure. And
bravo, you did it. But like, there's something really Rob Liefeld in the way her anatomy's working that I find kind of off-putting.
Okay, so
but
that's
I imagine you could rule 34 her and have it looking pretty hot if you like anime girls.
Plenty of people do, yeah. I know. Yeah, I'm not trying to like shame anybody, because I think like drawings of women can be sexy. I just, this is so primitive, like the animation style.
Sure.
Just like, I don't find it sexy. Same with Lana. I mean, that's just like, it's a handful of lines, right? It's not, there's barely any
shading.
Honestly,
what I think men are responding to and when women of that proclivity is the energy, because because Kathleen Turner's voice performance is fucking red hot lava fire.
Sure.
She has got that raspy sex kitten purr down cold. And also she's just, everything is a double entendre. And
right.
Like
helps.
There's, you know, like, you know, when it's like in that Community episode of where Annie is trying to come on to Jeff during to get him to participate in the Christmas Glee Club. And he's like, there's a diminishing rate of returns with the pouty child and the sexy ratio.
Yeah.
Kathleen Turner is in the pocket with this performance. So I think that's what it is. It's like she's just kind of the suggestion of a woman. And then that personality informs the rest.
I do wonder if this animation, if a animation of a woman like this would have blown people's minds in 1947 for how over the top sexy it was.
Yeah, might have caused riots.
Because when you're looking at like Steamboat Willie and shit like that, which was, you know, a little bit before
or
that.
Or olive oil.
Right. Yeah, that's a great
Betty
example.
Betty Boop. Uh-huh. Betty Boop was considered sexy.
Yeah. No, Jessica Rabbit would have just floored people. So maybe that's it. Maybe it's like of the time too. Did you know that, speaking of Popeye, that's one of the few rights they couldn't get in this movie? They couldn't get the rights to Popeye, which I think is
like
shame.
Mighty Mouse, right? I think it was Popeye, that's a shame. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, Popeye. I like him. I don't know. I feel like Popeye was a staple of my childhood cartoon watching.
I want to interrogate that. Was that like a Southern California thing? Because Popeye was Popeye was on the weird religious channels. Like, all of the three main channels in the Midwest had like old Looney Tunes. Would have like Woody Woodpecker, Hanna-Barbera. What was Woody Woodpecker
Yogi
was
Bear
like Walt.
Oh.
Yeah, but we didn't have like Popeye and Mighty Mouse and like Underdog is another one that is a weird out there one that people talk about.
It's more niche, yeah, for sure. I'm familiar with all of those.
Okay.
I don't know if it's... I don't want to, like, speak for SoCal on this front, but I don't know. I remember it being on a lot. Popeye's weird? Hmm. That's news to me.
Well, it's funny because I thought... I can't ever tell when you're trolling. Like, sometimes you're like, you know, you
I'm
got,
for real
like...
Here.
Yeah, well, I get that, but, like, you've said that you actually liked a Robin Williams Popeye movie, which kind of blows my mind.
This is true.
I think that's a terrible movie.
Look, man, I saw it when I was 8, maybe?
Yeah?
Yeah. I don't know if it holds up. It's been a long time.
We should do a retro podcast on that.
That would be fun, yeah.
Anyway, you missed a Pat Popeye's on in there.
I do. I wish he was.
I really enjoy how often, like, how defensive Bob Hoskin is for Toon bullshit and how rarely it actually saves him. Like, when he's at the club and he's ordering a scotch on the rocks and the penguin walks off and he goes, and I mean ice! And then, like, and then you know, he has, like, two other conversations and then the penguin comes by and he just notices it's actually got rocks and he's like, God damn.
Toons.
There's, like, several of those things that happen and it never failed to slay me.
Yep. You wanted to talk, I think, a little bit about the Roger-shaped window and the blinds when, you know, he blows his top and declares, I'm gonna get Jessica back. Because I thought that was a really funny, cool effect, especially in the real world context. Like, this drawing could smash through this window and do this cartoon thing to it.
Yeah. We'll be right back with more Bald Move after this brief pause.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't a joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
And now, back with more Bald Move.
How did they do that? I mean, I assume they just cut holes in wood and stuff. But
I don't know, because that's like, that is amazing. And I actually was trying to freeze frame it a couple of times.
Uh-huh.
Because I suspect that you notice that they kind of smash cut to the windows. So I think they cut away and then they switch the window out and then they smash cut back.
Yeah.
But
I noticed quite a bit of that.
I gotta say, that's one of my least favorite interactions because I don't like, I think the window should have been at the minimum shaft. I think should have done that to a wall because I bought by. Does this sound stupid? It sounds stupid to me as I'm saying it. I'll buy that a character, a cartoon character can knock out an exact silhouette from like a brick wall.
Yeah, yeah.
But a pane of glass, I just don't buy
it. It would shatter. Yeah, it would shatter.
That's what I'm saying. On Venetian blinds, they would splinter. You need thank you. Thank you. Cinder block, brick, drywall. Yes, but glass? And bamboo?
Sure, I feel you. I understand what you're saying there, but I enjoyed it nonetheless. Here's the thing that surprised me about that is where they didn't go, where I expected them to go, because it's a classic in like a Roadrunner thing where, you know, the Roadrunner goes up and he paints on the side of a cliff. He paints a tunnel, big-ass tunnel, and he draws a road going up to it, and then he somehow miraculously uses that tunnel. And then when Wile E. Coyote tries to, he smashes right into the brick wall, the side of the cliff. They had the perfect opportunity to do that with Bob Hoskins here in this movie when he goes to the tunnel and to Toontown, and they don't do it.
You're right.
How is that possible?
You know, I guess they did with the lock at the end do something with like a hole or a cartoon tunnel, but I kind of thought that too.
That's like when she drove in, I expected him to try and give chase and just smash right into the wall.
Or like when I saw the curtains, it was going to roll up and do something else.
Yeah, I don't know.
I do like that there's literally like a Warner Brothers style cartoon red curtains that separates the real world from the cartoon world.
Yep, and you get the Porky Pig at the end. That's all, folks. I like that.
How did the bathroom work where Bob Hoskins went in through the door and the bathroom was missing and then he fell down the entire skyscraper? Was there a bathroom that just jutted out from the side of that penthouse?
There must have been. Like,
did they just crap
dread
on this? Is this like a crapper in the English castles of old? You just
flushing
just
it.
An opening in the outer wall?
Maybe. I don't know. That was a cool transition, too. So there are like two transitions in this movie, right? One from the animated short to the real world, and then one from the real world into Toontown. It's cool how they flip everything on its head there, because up till now, all these toons have been interacting in their toon-like ways with the real world. And the physics of the real world kind of affected the toons in a lot of ways. And here it's the other way around. Like, the physics of Toontown are affecting Bob Hoskins' character, Eddie. Like, when he steps out into that bathroom that doesn't exist, he hangs there until he notices that the bathroom floor doesn't exist, and then he falls. And then, presumably, his arms shoot up and extend, you know, 20 feet into the air to grab his hat as he drops back down.
Yeah.
And then in the elevator, he gets flattened like a toon. There's some weird portal that he goes through which takes him to another reality. And I thought it was just cool how they juxtapose, you know, those two worlds and how the characters in them are affected by that world.
It's an interesting piece of world building, because like, you'd almost assume the opposite, like toons would be vulnerable in the mortal world. Like, if Bob Hoskins is a functionally immortal, like a toon in Toon World, in Toontown, then why aren't the toons like vulnerable to...
Because Dip is
more
fun.
But did
that
ruin the Dip? The Dip is a hell of a lot more fun.
I love the Dip.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Do toons have any kind of civil rights?
They clearly have some rights within our society because Acme can leave Toontown to them legally. So they are legal persons.
So how does Judge Doom summarily execute that sneaker? Is it only sentient cartoons? Because the other thing is, like, they imply that he was going to dip Roger, with no trial, because he said he's like, I'm going to bring the rabbit to justice. Like, okay, well, if Roger Rabbit gets convicted by a jury of his peers and they say the death penalty and they dip the, then okay, fine. But like, I'm like, okay, well, maybe just the non-sentient, you know, like the shoes don't get, but the shoes seem sentient. It had a face.
Yeah. Yeah, it was sad when it was being dipped. It was maybe scared.
It's at least like a human level, but man, I gotta say, even as a 12, that terrified my 5-year-old. I think she was 5 at the time. It actually shook me as a 12-year-old. Like, that's pretty fucking heartless. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
That's the equivalent of live action of Christopher Lloyd dipping a puppy in sulfuric acid.
Yeah. Slow dipping it too, like
he
doesn't just drop it in and let it die, he dips it bit by bit.
Yeah, tippy tail first, and it's the whole time it's giving you literal puppy dog eyes and suffering and whimpering.
Yeah,
Jesus, yeah, Christ, that that's there's nothing else in the movie that's hard.
The shocking thing to me when I fired this up is I remember this movie, you know, having very sexy things in it, having some adult themes from time to time, having terrifying things from time to time. And when I saw the PG rating and the content warning was only for tobacco depictions, I was
insane.
Like, that's crazy, Disney.
A 12-month-old appearing baby that's actually 50 chain smoking cigars is the least objectionable thing,
right?
From a child, from something to scar a child that I can think of. Good Lord.
This dipping scene is horrible.
It is horrifying, and but I tell you what, I remember sweating fucking bullets at the end when Jessica and Roger were at the end of that hook, because you know that real dip kept getting closer and closer. It's because one drop of that and you're dead.
Yeah, the car made a recovery. Benny the cab.
Do what now?
Benny the cab, he drives through a little bit of dip, doesn't get him all the way, but he recovers.
Yeah, I think it's like, yeah, that's true. If it touches like a piece of clothing, like that's effectively his shoes, right?
The tires, yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, yeah, and he was in and out of it before you knew it.
What is there like an analog in, and maybe our producer would be better informed on this, Talitha, is there an analog the Toontown is supposed to be in LA? Like, is it Studio City? Is it Burbank? Because I feel like we're in Burbank for a bit of it with these old studios.
Oh, I thought you were saying in real life LA. If real life LA had a Toontown where cartoons lived, where in LA would it be?
Pretty much.
I was going to say, where do actors live? But those would be successful actors, and Toontown holds everybody. Like, I wonder if there's like a Beverly Hills part of Toontown.
Sure. I wonder who lives there. I wonder who the well-off and the less fortunate Toons are.
Baby like Herman Bugs, feels
definitely.
Like...
Bugs and Mickey are living the high life.
Oh, yeah. I think Baby Herman is the made-up version of, like, he's a very successful star. Like, Roger Rabbit's not. Roger Rabbit...
No.
Well, no, I mean...
He was at one point. He's just been off his game because of Jessica.
Because of Jessica acting weird.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I will say that the plot, I really appreciate that this is the villain essentially wanted to destroy public transportation in favor of making people pay for a toll booth on a freeway.
Yes.
Like, this that is a very, me. It's sophisticated. It's funny. The whole idea of who, you know, why would you pay to use the freeway?
It's kind of historically accurate, you know. LA has a notoriously shitty public transportation system because of stuff like this, because of corruption.
Yeah, and they were ready to sniff high speed rail, and Captain Tesla came in and said, "No, I want to have this Hyperloop stuff." See,
Jesus.
And where are we at with that? They're just still driving Teslas around in a tunnel in Las Vegas, right?
I think so.
That's a bummer. That's a real shame. What else in terms of Roger Rabbit? I feel like there's one other thing I really wanted to talk about. Oh, I do. I want to talk about two things that are potentially offensive in this movie.
Okay.
I don't even know. I feel like it's offensive. I feel like one of those bullets is a pretty gross Native American stereotype, but maybe not.
Yep. Seems
maybe
like
not.
It.
Maybe that is an actual depiction of like a cowboy era Native American that would participate with other roughneck kind of cowboy characters. But I really intensely like the idea of Yosemite Sam having sentient bullets that are miniature versions of himself and who are just as rootin' and tootin' and ready to go.
Yeah. I liked Yosemite Sam when I was a kid. He was funny. My biscuits are burning. I thought that shit was hilarious.
But one of the hardest times I laughed as a kid was God, I can't remember, but one of the kids in our congregation, you could get a laugh as a Jehovah's Witness just by swearing. But I forget what the bit was, but some comedian did something about imagining if cartoons were made for adults or something like that. And they have Yosemite Sam. Ooh, I want to kill that fucking rabbit. And just that it's I kind of have a soft spot for Yosemite Sam. Anyone that gets so angry, he uses his guns as Tony Stark style Iron Man rockets is okay in my book.
No Taz in this. I was kind of surprised we didn't see the Tasmanian devil, although that might have been animated later. I'm trying to remember. Taz had to be in the old Disney or old Warner Brothers stuff, right?
He's Warner Brother, yeah.
Or is he just too modern for this era of Warner Brothers?
No. He was in the classic era.
Why is he there? He's a great fun character. Get him in there to stir shit up.
I wouldn't be surprised if he's not in the background somewhere.
Probably.
But I wasn't watching that close. I have one other thing that's offensive. Was he Taz first released June? Oh, he wouldn't be in this movie. He was first released June 19, 1954, thanks to our superstar producer, Talitha. This takes place in 47, I saw. So that's period accurate. So do you remember the scene with Donald Duck and Daffy Duck?
Mm-hmm.
And they're having this musical back and forth, and they're having exchange of words.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, Donald calls him a stubborn nitwit.
Okay.
I've been told on TikTok that if you don't have the subtitles on, that when Donald Duck calls Daffy Duck a stubborn nitwit, that it sounds exactly like Donald is calling Daffy the insler.
Wow.
And I found that I could not hear that.
And the relative
colors of the ducks makes it very unfortunate.
Well, you've destroyed everybody's enjoyment of that scene from time immemorial. I
rewind and I'm like, there's the tattoo audio things for God, what was it? Anyway, maybe it's one of those things where it's like once someone suggested that, but like, god dang, it's definitely here. But it can't be. It's got to be nitwit. It's got to be one of those It's got to be one of those vocal tricks or some kind of megahertz that are flipped or inverted or converging or harmonic. The Dolby mix is off. It can't be that.
Or that these guys are just
telling you, if you
using...
watch this movie on the Disney on Disney Plus, watch that scene. It's hard to not hear. I think.
Gotcha. I thought you were going to say,
which is wild.
The offensive thing was Baby Herman slapping the ass of his caretaker, but yeah, I can see. I don't know. That seems like an artificial negative, an artificial controversy. Because they don't actually say it.
Can you prove it?
I mean,
what are you going to believe? The script, the subtitles, your own lying ears, Jim?
Can you prove that I just said prove and not proof?
Well, it's on the podcast. I guess if people heard you say a horrible slur, we'd have some explaining to do now, wouldn't we?
Tell me the difference between the word proof and proof.
Neither one of them are slurs.
No, of course not. I'm not going to say a slur to demonstrate my point.
Right, right. You wouldn't act. No one could listen to this podcast and say, proof. Oh my God, Jim just called just defamed the whole Portuguese race. Holy shit. He's got some explaining to do.
Proof might actually be a slur. I don't know. Everything's a slur.
Anyway, I don't want to believe that Donald Duck is a racist.
I don't either.
But it is the damnedest thing. Do we have anything else we want to talk about regarding Roger Robert?
I got to talk about the ending of this movie because it's absolutely phenomenal.
Okay.
Everything from the point where Christopher Lloyd turns around, he gets run over by the steamroller. Everything from that point on is amazing. And honestly, everything leading up to it is very good as well. But
yes, I co-sign all of that. That what he does in the voice booth, that has to be some kind of filter, right? There's no way Christopher Lloyd's hitting.
He can't hit that.
But
no.
And how it's kind of foreshadowed eyes. With. Yep. Yeah, like, why has he got a box full of eyeballs, man?
Mm-hmm. Why is he covering his eye when he's got the glasses on? Yeah.
Yeah, when he comes, I remember that being kind of terrifying as a kid, too. What, just the googly eyes and
the way they move around. And yeah, it's disturbing.
Did you see all the different alternate castings of this?
I did, yeah.
That they wanted to get Harrison Ford and Chevy Chase and Bill Murray, but
For the Bob Hoskins character, yeah.
Yeah, or Eddie Murphy, but there was either they didn't get the part or they were too expensive for the part or whatever. Went through a lot of different ones. But I noticed that it said Tim Curry was addition for the role of Judge Doom, but was rejected because the producers found him too terrifying.
I believe it. I believe it.
This is the man who did Pennywise the Clown.
Uh-huh.
And Christopher Lloyd, who I don't think is a particularly scary man, was pretty terrifying in this. Yep. There's got to be some reel of him somewhere, right?
I would love to see an audition for that because I'm picturing it in my head and it's horrifying.
I saw another leading contender is Christopher Lee. That's another really scary dude, man.
Yeah.
Imagine if he had Judge Doom under his belt along with Dooku and Saruman, boy,
oh, man.
And all those hammer horror. He's already a legend, but man, it just was funny how the ball break or the ball bounces there.
It's also foreshadowed. Was that?
I forgot that Christopher Lloyd was the Klingon in Star Trek III to search for Spock.
Absolutely. I will say it's also foreshadowed kind of by his appearance just in general. Seems very Toonish, right? He's got the pale skin. He's got the weird costume. He's got the teeth. I think it was the teeth that made me go, there's something weird about this guy. Because they're so, like, they're so perfect as if they're drawn.
Yeah, and there's also the fact that he wears this giant glove when he handles the dip. When the dip gets spilled, he's very, like, cautious about it getting anywhere. It's like there's a lot of stuff. It's very much like The Sixth Sense. Now that you know the twist, mm-hmm. to look for all of his cartoon tells.
Yep.
God, there's a lot of real. Like I love the fact that cartoons, you know, Roger Rabbit, like foolish cartoons can't resist a shave and a haircut bit. There's a lot.
That's a great gag. Yeah.
There's a lot of really funny just cartoon lore. You know.
Yep. I do wonder, he's shaved his head bald in this, I think, and got like a little prosthetic there. Is this around the time of the Addams Family as well? Because as Fester, obviously, he played bald.
I think Addams Family is like years later, actually.
Is it like 92 or something? Yeah, it might have been.
But when you consider this, I did want to talk about this. Now that we're going back for some other topics, I did want to talk about this in conjunction with like where animation was, because I felt like that this was an interesting kind of risk, because this is a year before The Little Mermaid came out, which kind of kickstarted Disney's kind of moribund animation department. Like they were at a nadir, and that kind of kickstarted a golden age. So I wonder if there's anyone that's written anything about like Roger, you know, the way people talk about like Oz being the foregleam of the golden age of television. It's not quite there. mm-hmm. but you can kind of see the. I wonder if Roger Rabbit is seen as kind of like something that was fortuitous for Disney because people got back into, like, in a very nostalgic way, animation. Like, adults were ready to go take their kids and become fans. And I wonder,
yeah, big time. I mean, this movie was a blockbuster success. It was made like $350 million or something.
Yeah, it was a real machine. And, like, I also think of the phenomenon of millennials and Gen Xers about the Disney. Yeah, Disney adults, you know, like, how much of this can you all trace back to Roger Rabbit in a real way, kind of rekindling people's interest and respect for animation?
Could be.
If not, maybe I should write a paper on it. I don't know. All right, that'll do it for our retro coverage of Who Framed Roger Rabbit. The next time we'll be talking about the screwball comedy, Some Like It Hot, starring... Jack Lemmon, Tony Curtis, and Marilyn Monroe. Then, Jim, tell us what the executive producers can look forward to voting for our next retro coverage project.
Well, we start off with a Clint Eastwood classic. I don't know. I've never seen this movie. Mystic River.
Me either. That'd be interesting.
Yeah. And I think that's from 2003, as are all the movies here. We also have The Last Samurai, which is the Tom Cruise... Japan samurai
Shogun
period
bait.
Piece.
Shogun bait.
Yeah. And then finally we have Secondhand Lions, which I think I might like more now that I haven't seen it for a decade. We'll see.
I've seen that movie a lot of times over the years at different phases of my life, and it never fails to kill me. No bad choices there. If you'd like to find out how you can become an executive producer or otherwise support us, and all the great features that come along, the benefits of being a club member, go to support.baldmove.com. Otherwise, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time for Some Like a Hot. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.